Spirit Guide Underground, July 14, 2007.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Welcome again, everyone, to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. Today we've got a little bit different stuff than usual. Of course, usual, we've only had, two podcasts before this, so there's not really a usual yet, I guess. Still kind of working on finding a groove here, but hopefully I'll get a little bit closer every time and you guys will benefit from that. We're going to look at the Gospel of John a little bit later. Let's see here. What's kind of an overview of the show? I'm going to do a comic of the week. I'm going to try and change that, change my format to just covering one comic book each week that I really liked or just stood out for one reason, for good or ill to me, so I don't get too carried away on comic books. And then this week we've also got some industry rumors and updates about like superhero movies coming up that I think you guys will find interesting if you haven't heard about them already. Anyway, though, before we get into all that, let's see what we have in terms of updates for Spirit Blade Productions.
Update information.
Okay, today was a really good week for us at Spirit Blade Productions. We had an actress come in, Melissa Van Slyke is her name, and she is playing kind of our seductive villainous character in Spirit Blade Dark Ritual. And she came and did her first recording session on, what was it, Tuesday? Yeah, I think it was Monday or Tuesday night. I can't remember exactly which now. But she did a fantastic job, and I think people are just going to love hating her character. Really a wonderful performance, and she's going to probably finish up recording next week. It may need one more session. I'm not quite sure on our pacing, but she's done a fantastic job so far, and you guys are really going to enjoy her in the final product, I'm sure. This week was also a good week for song composition. I'm working on a song called Veritas that is going to be performed by the male antagonist of the story. We do actually have two antagonizers in Dark Ritual, maybe even three, but it's different from the other kind of songs that I've done for the first Spirit Blade and the other songs I'm doing for this one. Most of my songs are usually very melodically driven, so there's, you know, a definite verse structure and a chorus structure and, you know, bridge and things like, you know, kind of in the sense of synth pop, you know, that it hangs on to some of the trappings of regular pop music, that you have a standard kind of song structure. But this one's going to be a little bit more, I don't know if impressionistic is too fancy a word to use for it, but there's going to be a strong presence of a chorus, but then it's going to be surrounded by various spoken audio clips that'll have, I hope, kind of a cool feel to it. But it comes at a place where characters are processing information and trying to figure things out, and so the audio clips will kind of represent some of the things that are going on in their minds. That's basically at the point now where I can almost drop vocals into it. I'm sure I'll make lots of adjustments to the track, but the track pretty much exists the way that that it's going to, I think, in the final product. I'll probably add some little effects and instrument sounds here and there, but I'm really happy with it. So that was exciting. This weekend there was a change in schedule. I was going to have an out-of-town actor in this weekend to record. And he's actually the actor that's going to be doing the song Veritas that I just mentioned. And he is not going to be able to come in this weekend. He's going to come next weekend instead. He and his wife are both actors out in California, in the L.A. area. And, you know, sometimes when work opportunities come up, when you're in that business, you just got to kind of go where the money is so that you can eat. So anyway, they had to make a schedule change for next week, but that's totally cool. We're still on track, and I'm excited to work with him. So that'll be next weekend that I may have some kind of report kind of in the midst of recording for you. That's it for updates.
Primary feature.
Okay, for the main feature today, we've got both my comic of the week pick and some industry news about some upcoming superhero movies. Let's talk about this comic book first that I read this week. It was a close call between Justice Society of America number 7 and Green Lantern number 21. There's an awesome story with the Sinestro Corps going on in Green Lantern that if you're a fan of the DC Universe, you've got to pick up, because there's some heavy hitters from DC history that are showing up in Green Lantern. You don't want to miss it. But my pick for this month, for this week, was Justice Society of America number 7. And I'll tell you why. Geoff Johns, the writer, is probably my favorite writer of all time that works at DC Comics. He's probably the busiest writer at DC Comics. He's got a real knack for taking old things and making them new, and not like in the way of completely overhauling them, giving a new costume and all this kind of, you know, totally different origin of their character and a whole new direction. We saw a lot of that in the early and mid 90s, but instead Johns, he looks at the essence of DC history, and he makes an effort to revive the classic concepts that are found in what is, I think, the richest legacy universe in the world of comic books. If there's one thing I love about DC, it's that rich sense of history and legacy that they have, and you don't see that anywhere else like you do in the pages of JSA, or Justice Society of America, because this team originated in the 1940s. In publishing history, it was the first time that comic book superheroes came together to fight and like show that they were in, they knew each other and they were part of the same world and stuff like that. So even back in, you know, the 1940s, the Justice Society comic book was groundbreaking because of just that. And it's still around today. Some of the characters have aged appropriately. So you've got like these, you know, older kind of senior citizen guys. They're kept just young enough by powers or whatever to be active duty guys, but they're probably hanging out in the bodies of at least late 40s to mid 50-year-olds kind of deal. But anyway, he hangs on to those old-timers and puts them in the action with the best of them just because he has a great deal of respect for them, you know. And when he brings in other people to, like, take places of original members that have died, you just can't avoid it, they're dead, so you have to bring somebody else in. He tries to make a connection by bloodline or some other method, like they're descended from the original member or something like that, or they knew the original member in some way, so that there's this clear feeling of legacy and family tradition in this comic book that I don't see in any other comic book universes, or really anywhere as strongly in the DC universe. This issue of Justice Society focuses on the new Commander Steel, although he's going by Citizen Steel, because, as he appropriately says, I've never been a member of the military, and so they rename him Citizen Steel. But he kind of comes across these powers. He's reluctant to be a hero, but it's like it's his great uncle, I'll have to read the comic book again, that was the original Commander Steel. And it's really cool to see him kind of dealing with his powers. I won't go into the origin, it's a little complex, but he's adjusting to these powers, and he's stronger than he knows. I mean, he can't touch people without breaking their bones, or he can't open doors without knocking them down. And so the issue is about him trying to figure out how he's going to survive when he doesn't have the nerve sensitivity of other people, and he's got this enormous strength that just makes him like a freaking juggernaut. So it's a very interesting story. I can't wait to follow this character in the future issues. So anyway, my pick for this week, Justice Society of America number 7. All right, so some industry news. And if you want to know where I get this stuff, I primarily go to a website called comics2film.com. That's comics2film.com. Or to Dark Horizons. I think that's just like darkhorizons.com, but I could be wrong. You can do a search, you know, on either one of those names and you'll find the website. But the latest news is that in anticipation of the upcoming Batman Begins sequel, which is titled The Dark Knight, they're going to start kind of a franchise campaign. You know, they're going to sell Coke and all that crap. But they're all going to they're also going to do some at least one thing that's cool. Hopefully, it's a direct-to-video anime-style series that takes place in the time period between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, and it further explores the Batman legend as it's presented in the films right now. So anyway, that that sounds very cool. I don't have anything on a release date or anything like that, but Batman The Dark Knight is coming out next summer, so I would guess that they would want to get this thing out by this fall or spring, something, or maybe early spring. Let's see here. Anthony Michael Hall. Now, there's some spoiler information about casting and stuff like that, so you might want to turn this off or fast forward or something like that. But I'm not going to give any major plot spoilers, I don't think, just like what characters are involved. Anthony Michael Hall is going to play Edward Nygma in The Dark Knight. Now, in the comic books, Edward Nygma is the Riddler. We don't know if he's going to be the Riddler in the movie. We just know that he's going to be playing Edward Nygma. And of course, we don't know, but there's just a lot of people that are hearing that from what they're considering credible sources. Let's see here. And also, Aaron Eckhart, who played the lawyer in Thank You for Smoking, he's playing Two-Face in this film. And there's just recently been a report of a scene being filmed with Aaron Eckhart in Two-Face makeup. So it seems the question may be answered of when is Harvey Dent in this new Batman franchise going to become Two-Face. I thought originally that it was going to be the next film after Dark Knight, but it looks like he's going to become Two-Face at some point during this movie, which could be really cool, but I'm a little nervous because this is supposed to be the big Joker introduction movie, and if we've got Two-Face as well, and Edward Nygma, who may or may not be the Riddler, might get a little bit packed, But they did fit at least two villains in the first one, we'll see if they can balance this one the same way. As far as what the makeup looks like, the description reads, there's scarring across the nose just a tad bit, one of his eyes is deformed, and little bubbles across the scarring. So hopefully it's, you don't get a real good sense from that description of what it looks like, but hopefully it will be cool. Let's see. Also, it's reported that they've been working on a chase scene for about 25 days and are saying that it will outdo the 15-minute highway scene in The Matrix Reloaded. Good freaking luck. That's an awesome chase scene. Even though a bunch of the cars are CGI, it's just still freaking cool looking. So good luck with that. In Spider-Man news, producer Laura Ziskin, who brought all three Spider-Man films to the big screen, is apparently slated for a sit-down with the chiefs at Sony Pictures Entertainment to discuss the franchise's future. And this is what she said. She said, "It would be great to have everybody back, but no one is going to sign on the dotted line until we have a script. These are the questions being discussed now. The one thing we have answered definitively is there will be more Spider-Man movies. We just haven't answered what shape they will come in, and Sony hasn't given us a release date." Gosh, I think they're going to have to really reinvigorate the series at this point to recover from 3. I thought 3 was great. I really enjoyed it, but there was a noticeable drop in focus on character, which is what made the first two films so wonderful, along with all the fantastic action and special effects. So, when she says there will be more Spider-Man movies, we just haven't answered what shape they will come in. Smells like animated direct-to-video, maybe, is what she has in mind. I mean, that could mean anything. So there's nothing right now. She says there will be more Spider-Man movies. Well, that could mean anything. It could be, a direct-to-video piece of crap on the Sci-Fi Channel, or it could be an animated movie or something like that. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that until we get some more, some firmer news on that. Things are not looking so shiny for Fantastic Four. Although the Rise of the Silver Surfer sequel was seen as a major upgrade for the franchise, the box office has not reflected it. Again, this is all taken off of comics to film. Proceeds dropped 66% in its second weekend, following an exceptional $58.1 million box office opening. So Fox is developing a Silver Surfer follow-up and is considering another Fantastic Four sequel, but no script is in development, sources say. I hope this is just a lesson to Fox, that this is what happens when you cater more to the younger audiences that haven't grown up with Fantastic Four. You know, in one sense, I kind of, you know, mourn the loss of comic books not being for kids anymore, but in another sense, you know, it's really frustrating to see movies when they're trying to it almost seems like they're trying to reinvigorate comic books by getting kids involved in the movie, or they have a limited idea of who the comic books, you know, are for, and so they think, oh, this movie's for kids because the comic books are for kids. But comic books have evolved so much that they're for mostly middle-aged teenagers up through, like, you know, 30s, 40s, 50-year-olds. Gosh, I really hope they take the source material more seriously next time, maybe get a different director. I'm glad that somebody with money and financial backing is seeing the results of the poor sequel. Lastly, Superman Returns, the unofficial release date is 2009, summer 2009, so we'll get a Batman movie next summer, and if all things go well, a Superman movie the summer following. Kevin Spacey is on board again to play Lex Luthor. He's hoping to film in a six-week time slot again, like he did with the first one, and that would be sometime during or after April 2008, because he's got a play that he's doing that I think gets done sometime in April or something like that. So anyway, that's the industry news.
Every word of God proves true.
Doctor will set you free.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Doctor will set you free.
Okay, if this is your first time joining us, this is part of our weekly Bible study. We're currently checking out a chapter each week from the Gospel of John and trying to find some valuable truth that'll help us understand our lives and really give us a clear picture of who Jesus is, because a lot of people like Jesus, but they don't like Christianity. And so we want to try and figure out how to reconcile the two, if Jesus matches kind of the ideas that Christians have about him today, or have we just kind of taken things he said out of context and just kind of run with them or whatever. So we're exploring the character and claims of Jesus. If you haven't read chapter 9 yet, we strongly encourage you to pause and read through it. It's not a very long chapter. And then listen to the rest of our observations here. We really want to get you into the Word of God, because it is way more important than anything that I have to say. So please do that if you haven't. Okay, so in chapter 9, the disciples bring to mind an interesting question. Do bad things happen to punish us for some wrong? Is there some big karmic machine that's running in the spiritual world and controlling the universe? Well, Jesus flat out denies this concept. He says that this man's blindness was put in place to show God's power, which was then really displayed when he healed this man. And that's something, you know, that we can take comfort in. When bad things happen, it's for some purpose God has in mind that's ultimately going to draw attention to him. You know, we can be so focused on why me? Why is this happening to me attitude, you know? We forget the universe doesn't revolve around us. Even humanity as a broad whole is not the main character in this cosmic story. God is, and it's just an awesome thing that we get to be a part of. We get to be characters in the story and be in the front row seat as his story plays out. Okay, we've heard, I know I have, and you probably have, well, maybe you haven't. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, I believe if there was only some kind of miracle, I mean, really clear and obvious miracle, I'd believe in God, or I'd believe in Jesus if I could see his miracles today or whatever. You know, I think based on chapter 9, that's not necessarily true. The Pharisees here, they received clear proof that this miracle had really happened. But if they acknowledge Jesus as Messiah, their roles would become obsolete, their corruption would be just displayed to everyone, and their big honored status would be completely taken away. So, I mean, in the face of what was really undeniable evidence, they deliberately chose to continue in disbelief in order to hang on to their comfort and independence. And how relevant is that to where we're at today? I think, you know, we don't have the benefit of seeing Jesus doing miracles right in front of us. But if we examine history and just attack this thing logically and examine who Jesus claimed to be, if we just examine the evidence, it becomes clearer and clearer that this stuff is legit. This stuff really happened. But in the end, it's a choice. It's a choice to want to live our own way because we want to do our own thing. That's just some perspective on why people do not believe historically, and I think why many people don't believe today. We can find another modern parallel in terms of our culture today and something that happened in chapter 9 here that with the blind man's parents. They didn't want to give Jesus credit, even though, you know, they couldn't deny what happened to their son, because they knew they'd be condemned, they'd be excommunicated by the Pharisees. And I think today many sincere Christians feel hesitant to be open about their faith because the American culture is becoming increasingly antagonistic toward the Christian faith. Now, we have to acknowledge that happened because some people calling themselves Christians have done some terrible things using their beliefs as justification. But despite the term Christian carrying a lot of baggage, we can't just cower, you know, in the darkness and avoid mentioning our faith. If we have opportunity, and we do all the time, to genuinely love and be a friend to someone that's not a Christian, we've got to do that. In fact, that is, I believe, the only way they'll understand what a real Christ-following Christian is, and it'll give them a glimpse of the character of God. I'm not talking about preaching to people. There will be an opportunity that'll show up, I'm sure, in every relationship that we have to express truth. But the main focus should be loving, you know, this person. 1 John 4:12 says, "No one has ever seen God, but if we love each other, God lives in us, and his love has been brought to full expression through us." And this wasn't on the weblog earlier this week. In later on in the Gospel of John, chapter 13, I'm getting a little ahead, chapter 13, 34 and 35, Jesus says, "So now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." So first and foremost, we're meant to love other Christians. And as the world sees how much we love each other, that's going to make a huge impact. And we're also called to love everyone else. That's how people are going to know that we're following Christ, and that's how people are going to get an image of who Christ is. Now, again, concerning the character and claims of Jesus, he tells this healed man that he's come to judge the world, and that's something that only God can do, so that's a very bold claim. Likewise, this healed man began to worship Jesus, and Jesus accepted worship. And this is in major contrast to angels and prophets and apostles in the Bible who, when given worship, they're quick to correct those that are doing it and redirect them to worshiping God alone. So to see that pattern in Scripture and then to see Jesus just kind of accept it, in fact, it might have even been right after that. I don't have that passage in front of me in the context of the healed man worshiping him where he tells him that he came to judge the world. So, I mean, he's not denying himself worship. He's not playing the false humility game. He's basically, by not doing anything, saying what you're doing is right. In fact, here's why I'm here, you know. This is Jesus. This is the Jesus that so many people love and respect and honor. But yet these are a lot of the kind of words and claims that people don't hear or don't think of when they think of Jesus. But they're worth thinking about because it really forces us to consider, okay, who is this guy really? Is he a nut job or is he who he claimed to be? All right, the question I want to leave you with this week, and I'd love to have you comment on our weblog. Again, you can get there by going to www.spiritblade.net and just clicking on the weblog link. Those are the easiest directions I can give you. The question for commenting this week. We don't really know why Jesus chose to make mud with his saliva to put on the blind man's eyes as part of the healing miracle. I've always kind of wondered about this. Can you think of a possible reason why he chose to perform his miracle in this way? There is, in one of the study Bibles I have, there is an interesting kind of theory in there, but I won't mention it here. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Think creatively as you want. There's really not really a right answer. I mean, even the thought that was included in the study Bible is kind of like, yeah, okay, that could be, but I don't know if there's really any strong evidence for it. So be creative and give us your thoughts on why would he spit in some dirt, make some mud, instead of just like touching this guy's eyes and saying, aww, or something like that. So anyway, that's it for chapter 9 this week. Be sure and join us next week when we cover chapter 10. All right, thanks for hanging out with us. That's all we have for today. If you want to keep up to date on all the things going on at Spirit Blade Productions, go on over to www.spiritblade.net. There's a big website there with lots of free downloadable content and cool stuff you can check out to find out more about us and what we're doing now and in the future. There's also a link to the weblog where we post something 3 times a week. We've got another weblog, my personal weblog, where I talk about all my geeky stuff during the week. Www.spiritblade.net is the portal to all of that geeky goodness. Have a great week. We hope to see you next time. And in all things, please seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Green Lantern is awesome. Vader is a crazy freak.